Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down, my blood sugar is down, my weight's down, my health is up, my sleeping patterns are better, my metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out. And happy Wednesday. Today we're going to take a deep dive into the state of national security, the open border, the war with Ukraine and Russia, the war of Israel against Hamas after the heinous terror attacks here, Iran's proxy war against Western interests everywhere, often unaddressed by the Biden administration. I want to do a deep dive today and really understand. And oh, by the way, China. Can't even begin to underestimate the threat that China poses to all of us and to this great country. In fact, on that note, just a quick programming note. Tonight on the Just the News, No Noise television show on Real America's Voice, we're going to spend the whole hour talking about the China threat. We've got some good ones. Chairman James Comer from the House Oversight Committee, he's now begun a full-scale investigation of China's infiltration of the United States. That's a big word, infiltration of the United States. It means they're on our soil. They're making inroads here to threaten our security. We're going to start with that tonight, so please check that. I think on Monday, we're going to adapt that TV show to a special version of the podcast so you can listen and learn from that. But today, I've got two really brilliant national security foreign policy experts. Dan Hoffman, former CIA station chief in Moscow, one of our intelligence agency's most learned Russia experts. He also served in the Middle East. He's got a lot to say about the open border and its potential Achilles heel for security here for terrorists, the ISIS-K attack in Russia, why Vladimir Putin has been pushed into an unexpected alliance with Iran, North Korea, and China. One of the legacies of the Biden administration is that Russia and China are playing together and becoming codependent on each other in ways that our national security establishment would never have allowed and never would have even conceived of until Joe Biden was president. And of course, it began with Afghanistan and spiraled from there. I think Dan will also talk a little bit about the war Israel is fighting against the Hamas terrorists, specifically the fact that Hamas is trying to inflict damage on its own civilians in Gaza, its own Palestinian people, because it's the only way they can gain upper hand in the information wars. They're losing the kinetic war, but the information wars, they're helping terrorist groups across the world raise money, raise recruits, and Hamas is willing to sacrifice its own people, the people they claim they were representing in government. To do that, Dan Hoffman's going to drill into that. He's got, I think, one of the best takes on that and why so much of what the Biden administration has done to appease the left by handicapping and shaming and hampering Israel is counterproductive to the American interest, the national security interest of America. So Dan Hoffman will kick us off. He's one of my favorites. In the second block, because it is AMAC Wednesday, we always get a chance on this day to talk to my good friend Bobby Charles, former Assistant Secretary of State, former Chief Investigator for the House Oversight Committee, and before that, a clerk for one of the most important appellate courts in the country. And also, people forget this about Bobby, he was an intelligence officer for a long time. He has an extraordinary view on what that looks like and what the warning signs are that an analyst would be looking for. Both Dan Hoffman and Bobby Charles really understand the threat we're facing. And it's going to be a really great conversation. That's going to be our sole focus today. We're going to do that. I want to do a quick run through the headlines just to make sure you're up. Hunter Biden's in California trying to ask a judge to dismiss his tax case. It's probably not going to happen. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if prosecutors don't counter with, hey, Hunter, your father says it's time to crack down on tax cheats. You're one of them. Sorry, you got to pay the consequence. Let's see if that comes out in the prosecutor's filings today. Down in Florida, Ron DeSantis settled his long-running dispute with Walt Disney World over its special governance district. That's probably good news for the state of Florida, good news for Disney. And shows, you know, even though Governor DeSantis picked a principled fight and fought it out, he also is pragmatic about getting to a solution that benefits all the folks in the country. And I think that's important. A big hat tip. You know, I come from a family of blue. My father, my brother, almost 100 years of law enforcement service between them. Baltimore police had just 90 seconds when they learned that that barge was about to crash into the bridge and potentially take the bridge down. They were able to stop traffic and save countless lives. Hat tip to the men in blue in Baltimore, to those officers on the bridge, also to those incredible, brave construction workers who were still working there when that barge hit. Obviously, six of them appear to have lost their lives. How tragic, one of them still critically injured. To the working men and women of Baltimore, the men and women on the bridge, the men and women in blue, we salute you. We mourn your losses. We thank you for your valor. We thank you for your quick action yesterday. I remember when Baltimore and other cities wanted to defund the blue. Well, they better refund the blue, because these guys did something really extraordinary yesterday on that bridge. And they do it every day in communities across this country. It's so, so important. Marco Rubio, he's called for an investigation into Planned Parenthood and its potential transfer or sale of fetal tissue from abortions. That is something that Donald Trump's Justice Department began investigating. The FBI never finished it. Marco Rubio putting new pressure on that abortion industry on that specific issue. We didn't get the coverage yesterday because it happened late in the day, but Ken Paxton, his 9-year federal criminal case brought by the Justice Department over alleged security violations, dismissed, settled. He paid a fine, no criminal liability. That's one of the lawfare cases that has gone conservatives' way. The other one, Matt Schlapp, we have him on this show often, the chairman of the American Conservative Union, the Conservative Political Action Coalition, CPAC, the man who 15 months ago accused him of groping him and defaming him, withdrew that lawsuit yesterday and apologized to the Schlapp family for causing them harm, saying his allegations were rooted in a quote-unquote misunderstanding. How about that? Two cases that the media celebrated, two attacks on conservatives, both of them in reversal in the last 24 hours, a very important moment there. And then I hinted at this yesterday. This is such an important story. We still feel the pain of Lake and Riley's family. We see the parents and we just wish that what happened hadn't happened. It was avoidable. But in Michigan, in Grand Rapids, in fact, there was a 25-year-old woman who was murdered and left on the side of a road. That's right. She died on the side of a road. The man arrested for Ruby Garcia's murder is an illegal immigrant. His name is Brandon Ortiz Veit. He's a Mexican citizen. He was a DACA, according to our sources in the United States government. He was a DACA child. He was allowed into the country lawfully, but he lost that privilege when he got into some criminal trouble. He was deported by the Trump administration in 2020, allegedly over a drunken driving incident or intoxicated driving incident. He then snuck back across the border. There's no record of him coming through entry or seeking asylum. So he's most likely going to be categorized as a gotaway, someone that just fell through the cracks and got back into the country. And then he's charged with the murder of this poor young woman, 25-year-old Ruby Garcia. She joins Lake and Riley and all the other victims of illegal alien violent crimes that we've been chronicling here. Go read this story. It's a very important story. This story has all the elements of the left's open borders policy: DACA, deportation, gotaways, and of course, ultimately, a murder case. The headline on that story by my good colleague Stephen Richards is "From DACA to Deportation to Murder, Michigan is the latest state hit by immigration enforcement lapses." All right, that's the headlines. Many more on the site. We're cranking out about 50, 70, 80 stories a day on Just the News. And one of the things I just want to say quickly, if you like Just the News and you want to help us continue to report the truth the way we've done it, with accuracy, with courage, and with determination, and with integrity. We want to tell you stories. We want to be first, but first we want to be right. And I think our history of being right has been validated. We were called conspiracy theorists on the lab on January 6th, on Russia collusion, and on Hunter Biden. And of course, all of those conspiracy theories came true because they were true when we reported them. It was the counterattacks that were dishonest. But if you want to support our reporting and also have some fun, this isn't just a pitch for doing something serious, but you can support our reporting for $4.99 a month or $44.99 a year. You can get what is known as the VIP Subscriber Club subscription. You're going to get our website ad-free. There's no ads on the videos, no ads on the text. The podcast still have ads because those are served by the podcast network, not us. But you'll get an ad-free experience on the site. And once a month, I just did this last night, you get to hang out with me for 1 hour and I answer your questions. We have a town hall. You join, you ask questions, I answer them. It's really fun. If you want to join, support our journalism. We want to hire another 3 or 4 reporters so we can own some other areas of coverage, like the rise of anti-Semitism, intolerance, and hatred in America, like national security and the border. Go to justthenews.com/subscribe. That's justthenews.com/subscribe for $4.99 a month or $44.99 a year. You can support our reporting. You'll get the benefit of ad-free reading, ad-free viewing, and just as importantly, a chance to hang out at a town hall with like-minded patriots like yourself asking me questions. To do that, support us. Go to justthenews.com/subscribe. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, former CIA Moscow station chief, one of the great clandestine officers of our nation's spy agency, Dan Hoffman, will be here right after these messages.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. There's so much going on in America right now. We sometimes forget about all the national security issues that make this world so much more volatile today than it was a decade or so ago. Russia-Ukraine, Israel-Hamas war, and a growing axis of reliance of Russia, Iran, North Korea, and now even China a little bit more in the mix, something I would have never imagined 10 years ago. Our next guest has been warning about the consequences of this sort of axis of evil merger. He is a former CIA officer, one of the best national security experts this country's ever produced, my good friend, Dan Hoffman. Dan, good to have you back on the show.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me on the program.
I love the analysis you do. And I think sometimes people have a lot of short-sighted conversations in Washington about what this budget thinks, what that budget is. But the world has become increasingly different, I think, with Russia having to return every day to Iran for its drones and China for cash and oil. There's a new axis of evil. I remember when President Bush used that word back in the early war on terror, but there's a new merger and it really has significant consequences for American security, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Sometimes I think, for me at least, it's important to take a step back away from the tactical challenges we face. And I'm not saying those aren't super important, but this is at the geostrategic level here, where one of the unexpected consequences of Russia's barbaric invasion on Ukraine has been the fact that Russia is now the midwife for this century's axis of tyranny, where you've got Russia relying like never before on China for export of hydrocarbons, on North Korea for artillery, on Iran for drones. Those four nations are collaborating like never before. And that makes what are already wickedly complex threats to our national security that much worse. Very difficult for us to solve the North Korea challenge, the nuclear challenge that they pose to us in the Korean Peninsula, or Iran's nuclear program, their ballistic missiles, and their proxy terrorists. And then obviously you've got China really putting Russia in a very subordinate position here, where the Russians are on their knees begging for whatever they can get from the Chinese. It's a very dangerous, and I would argue pretty unexpected development for us. And I'm quite sure that our intelligence community is focused very hard on this, the extent to which these four nations collaborate. And beneath the surface, John, I can tell you that they share a lot on the intelligence side. So if you're wondering, where does North Korea get to, you know, get the expertise to hack into, you know, Sony, for example, or how Iran is focused on our infrastructure, according to Director CIA. Yeah, the Russians collect intelligence on U.S. vulnerabilities, and it's their intra-currency in this axis of tyranny. They share that intelligence, and then the Chinese, North Koreans, and Iranians use it to their advantage.
And that's the term I think you coined. I mean, other people, I remember axis of evil, but this is really an axis of tyranny. The danger is, when I talked to some folks in the intelligence community recently, there's a lot of concern that this is having the look of not a temporary situation, but maybe a long-term alliance, that this is something that's going to blossom, not erupt after, you know, conveniences are reached. Is this a long-term potential realignment going on?
I think it is for now. Look, those three nations, especially China and Iran, are long-term strategic competitors of Russia. And so it's possible that when Vladimir Putin is gone from the scene, that the next Russian leader might kind of take another look at whether that's really to Russia's advantage or not, to be that close with Iran and China in particular. And I could just tell you, based on my experience dealing with Russian intelligence officers, they would be incredibly concerned about Russia's interaction with North Korea, that's just kind of gone off the rails there a bit. And so I think they'll be reexamining those relationships, but it won't happen until Putin is gone from the scene. Right now, for Vladimir Putin, he puts his own regime security over everything else. He values that over the lives of his own people, obviously, because there have been over 300,000 casualties in Ukraine in Putin's unjust, unprovoked war against Ukraine. And it's all about his regime security because he's afraid of democracy.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. And now fresh off his new 6-year term, he's got a lot of longevity going. I want to turn to the battlefield itself. When you hear, and you have to listen to the subtleties, but with some of the armed forces chiefs and intelligence and national security briefings in the last few weeks, it seems as though Russia has maybe made some slight gains. Ukraine is struggling a little bit, both in human resources and, of course, in armaments. Is Russia making some progress on the battlefield? And is that obviously going to be concerning to all of us, I assume?
I think they're making some tactical gains, very small ones. But I think we should also remember that Ukraine is winning. And by extension, so are we. This is less than 5% of our Department of Defense budget that has gone towards supplying Ukraine with the munitions that they need, though not enough and not fast enough to stay in the fight against Russia. That's a pretty good return on our investment. We've got two new NATO members, Sweden and Finland, thanks to Ukraine's courageous defense of their homeland. NATO has been awakened from their post-Cold War slumber. You know, you've got countries now building out their defense industrial base, spending more than 2% of their GDP on defense. That all matters. So I would argue that Russia's not winning. I think Ukraine, every day that Ukraine is free and sovereign is a victory for Ukraine. But we've never given them what they need when they need it. We've allowed...
Always too slow.
Yeah, his rhetorical nuclear brinkmanship to deter us from doing the right thing, unfortunately. And if you listen to a lot of Republicans in the House and in the Senate, they've been very vocal about calling on the Biden administration to do more, not less, and do it with some alacrity. But, you know, there's been, I think, just a tentative approach to our national security that doesn't help us there.
Yeah, I hear sometimes when talking to people, you know, currently in, they talk about the hesitancy factor, which is there. It seems as though the Biden administration analyzes things so long, they're too hesitant to do anything. And by the time they do something, it's two steps or three steps behind when it should have been done for maximum impact. And that probably is going across the national security front, not just on Russia. Quickly turning to Israel and the Hamas war, there was this extraordinary moment in the UN where the U.S. abstained on a resolution. It seems to have really inflamed the U.S.-Israeli relationship. Obviously, it's going to always stay together in some form. But what's behind that, and what are the short and long-term implications of this sort of unusual dynamic between Netanyahu and Biden?
Yeah, so that was it's a pretty direct signal from the Biden administration to Israel that they aren't happy. It's a non-binding resolution. And remember that the resolution called for a ceasefire, and it also called for release of hostages. It just didn't link the two, and that's what really bothered the government of Israel, and rightly so. The problem we face here is that Hamas is embedding themselves, deliberately so, with civilians, and discerning who's who for Israel, extremely difficult. I can tell you from my experience serving in war zones, you know, for moral and ethical reasons, not to mention the strategic goal of winning the war, you don't want to kill innocent civilians. Israel doesn't want to do that. And they're trying to limit civilian casualties as much as they can. For Hamas, the more dead Palestinian civilians, the better.
It's good for them, right?
They're losing every military engagement of this war, they're losing, guaranteed. But even that, though that's happening, they're still winning the information war. Look at our college campuses and all the protests we're seeing on the streets in London, and people ignorantly screaming out from the river to the sea. Probably most of them don't even understand what that means. Or, you know, college kids calling for another intifada.
They can't even name the river or the sea. Yeah, they can't when you ask them.
Yeah, so you wish that they would be a little more critical in their research before they rush to conclusions, and less with less predisposed ideological, political bias, whatever's going on. But that's what Hamas is gaining here, and they knew it when they went in and murdered innocent Israeli kids, raped and murdered them. And then put it out all over the internet. They knew that the result would be a counteroffensive in Gaza, and they wanted it. And this is what they're getting, and it's inciting their followers. So they're getting a lot of financial money. They're getting a lot of money fundraising from this. They're recruiting new followers and a new generation of terrorists who are going to take the fight to their enemies, including us. That's the concern that I have. If you look at the ISIS-K attack in Moscow, what that demonstrates is the capability of a terrorist group enjoying some ungoverned space in Afghanistan to develop enough of a logistical tail, guns and money and planning, to go mount a mass casualty attack in Russia. That's got to be ringing alarm bells, not just in Europe, but here at home in the United States.
Well, there's no doubt. Watching the all the national security chiefs testify a week or so ago, I haven't seen the intelligence community that overtly expressing their concern and that their nervousness. I mean, they really seem nervous about what lies ahead in the future. And I think, you know, Moscow then automatically improves it. I think a lot of people were surprised. Why is ISIS striking Russia? But ISIS has always had its own bone to pick with Russia, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Long-standing grievances from Central Asian Muslims. And of course, ISIS-K isn't just Afghanistan-based. It's also, they're also in Iran, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan. So it's that. It's also the fact that Russia has been killing a lot of ISIS terrorists in Syria, saddled up with Iran, also an apostate for the Al-Qaeda and for ISIS. And so they're targeting Russia for that reason as well. No, for sure. Russia's always been in the crosshairs of terrorists. And if you look back at some of the attacks in Russia, Beslan, the worst school shooting in the history of the world, 2004, the Dubrovka theater that terrorists hijacked, and of course Russian security services killed a lot of those people by using gas, in ways that they shouldn't have, killed even a U.S. citizens there as well. You've got a twin attacks in the Russian metro, terrorist attacks in 2010, a suicide attack in front of the Russian embassy in Kabul a couple of years ago. And let's not forget that in 2017, the CIA shared intelligence with Vladimir Putin's intelligence services about an attack that was planned in St. Petersburg that the Russians thwarted and prompted a call from President Putin to President Trump thanking President Trump. And so, you know, look, I think we passed the Russians threat warning about this latest attack. My guess is that it was probably fragmentary. It wasn't detailed about the time and the place. And so finding those, that's just super hard to find a needle in a stack of needles of all the places that these terrorists could have targeted. But the Russians don't do a great job of counterterrorism inside their own country.
No, they don't.
That's what you're seeing.
Yeah, it's a real weakness. And but I think a lot of people just didn't understand. Yeah, it is for the Russian people. It's definitely tragic. And you know, you go to a concert and you end up with that sort of massacre. It's just unforgivable. It's just like what Hamas did in Israel at the concert in Israel.
I've been there, man. I've been in that Crocus City Mall. I went to concerts in Moscow, both popular music, you know, like rock and roll concerts. And I went to classical music concerts. And those are, as you know, precisely the sorts of places terrorists are going to look to strike.
Yeah, the perfect soft target.
That's a mass casualty attack waiting to happen.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Let's bring it home to here. I know ISIS-K is probably a little ways away from launching something here, but when you hear the FBI director tell Marco Rubio over the weekend that there is a smuggling ring that has been bringing or has the potential to bring Islamic State people into the United States, the border seems to make what normally feels like our strong defenses against terrorism so much more vulnerable feeling. Are we in a really soft position right now?
Well, what you really want to do is detect the threat, we like to say, way out left of boom, and then preempt it before any harm is caused to our civilians here in the United States. And so we're working on that all over the world 24/7. But when we are weak at their point of attack, which is our southern border, it just drives up the risk. Like, if we're not perfect at detecting and preempting every single threat to our national security from terrorists all over the world, and somebody makes it to our southern border and it winds up in part of a sleeper cell in the United States, that puts the onus on state, local, and federal law enforcement at the point of attack to get it right. And that we don't have, that doesn't give them a lot of time because they're here already. And when they're ready to strike, they strike.
They move quickly, right? Yeah, they're not lingering.
They don't wait around because they think that, you know, a particular date's going to matter more than any other. They don't care. They just strike as soon as they're ready. And we are, look, that the terrorists have us in their crosshairs. We've got the ones that Iran is funding, proxy terrorists in Iraq and in Syria and the Houthis. But you've got Al-Qaeda enjoying ungoverned space in Afghanistan and ISIS-K. Enjoying the same sort of ungoverned space there. And so this is their opportunity to get to the United States. And I would argue, and Director Ray has said this, like the system's blinking red like it did before 9/11. And we've got to do a better job. If there's an attack in this country, we're going to hold our elected leaders responsible and ask, did you do everything you could? And I will tell you, John, honestly here, we're split in this country, Democrats, Republicans, 50-50. You know, everybody's got to understand that you're not going to get everything you want. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the very good. Negotiate. Make some deals. Okay, you won't get everything you want, Democrat or Republican lawmaker, but my goodness, do something. Because if you don't, we're going to get hit here. And you people, I don't know how you can put your head to the pillow at night if you're an elected leader in this country, in the Congress or in the executive branch, knowing you didn't do everything you could, knowing you didn't come to the sorts of agreements we need. Pass the right laws, get the right money out, increase. CBP needs more people. They need more money. They need more technology. Get it to them now. It's already too late. And I will tell you that we've lost a lot of people in the terrorist fight. Our elected leaders should make themselves worthy of those who made the ultimate sacrifice on behalf of our nation. And right now they're not. I'll be honest with you. They're just not.
They're not. And there's no we in America right now. It's us and them. And we're talking about ourselves, not our enemies. And that's just the ultimate exploitable moment for one of our true enemies to hit us. And I really worry about that. I want to just step back for one last thought here, because I think there's a lot of people wondering What are the consequences of Afghanistan? And clearly we talked about the lack of ISI, right? We don't have intelligence. We don't have surveillance. We don't have reconnaissance right now there. And so there is some robust growth in the training camps. But long-term, I think beyond the terrorists having their safe haven again, when I talked to world leaders recently, you know, foreign secretaries and others, there's a growing concern that America is talking in a confused way, that allies can't really read our intention and enemies seem to feel like this is a moment where they can move on. Is that a legitimate concern in our allied and enemy communities? And secondly, how do we solve it?
I think our actions are going to speak the loudest. And that means building out our defense industrial base, remembering President Reagan's maxim about their peace through strength. It means conducting counterterrorism operations and not obfuscating when, look, don't tell me about over the horizon operations. There's no such thing. You can't see over the horizon. You can see the horizon, but find me a person who can see over that. That's like, I'm not a scientist, but that's impossible. We don't have anybody in Afghanistan like we used to. We're not out there on the front lines detecting and preempting threats. And what's worse, it's a terrorist state now. And yeah, the Taliban and ISIS-K are at war with each other. But all that's doing is fanning the flames of terrorism because that's their oxygen. For ISIS-K, the more they fight against the Taliban and survive, that's how they recruit followers. It's how they get more money. And so it's a little counterintuitive, but the Taliban is actually fanning the flames of terrorism by engaging in this war they can't win with ISIS-K. So for the United States, it's we got to up our game. And to get back to our last point, we got to show that Democrats and Republicans can work together, which we haven't really. But also the Biden administration needs to show to take a page out of President Bush's playbook and take the fight to the enemy for all that that entails. And don't be shy about it. And there's more than we can do. I don't think we've been strong enough on Iran. I don't think we've deterred Iran. I still don't think we're not deterring the Houthis. They're disrupting freedom of navigation in the Red Sea. They made a deal with the Chinese and the Russians not to target them, even though they have by mistake. But we're not taking the fight to them. And I think that's a concern that I would have as well.
Yeah. Now the proxies they get to take pot shots whenever they want. There hasn't been a real consequence or deterrent action for them yet. And that is really remarkable. Dan, we always learn so much from you. You are truly a pro.
Oh, hey, thanks for having me on the program, John. I wish everybody who celebrates Easter have a great Easter, and I'll catch you the next time, sir.
Sounds good. Great to be with you today. Thanks so much.
You too. All the best.
All right, folks, don't go anywhere. When we come back, it's AMAC Wednesday. We're going to have Bobby Charles here. I'm looking forward to that in just a few minutes. But first, a quick word from our sponsors, partners, and advertisers.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. It is Wednesday, which means it is AMAC Wednesday, our great opportunity, and I really look forward to this moment every week, to talk with our good friend Bobby Charles at the Association of Mature American Citizens. Bobby is a legend in this town, and he's had all the important jobs to understand every branch of government. He worked in the judicial branch of government as an appellate clerk. He worked in Congress as chief investigator for the oversight committees, and he worked as an assistant secretary of state in the State Department. And in all those jobs, he got to see each of the three branches of government our brilliant forefathers put together in this republic. And he brings all three of those wisdoms and knowledges and experiences to every one of our conversations. And today's going to be no different. Let's welcome my good friend, Bobby Charles. Bobby, great to have you with us.
John, it is a pleasure to be with you. And you're always kind to me. But boy, are we blessed really to live in America. And I think our mission now is to just keep the America we're blessed to live in, the America that we want it to be.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. This is our moment to preserve it for the next generation. Prior generations preserved it for us, World War II and the Civil War and all that. This is our moment to preserve it. And I think Americans are looking out. I think, and I've said this several times in the last few weeks as I've been going through polling data, it feels like the tectonic plates under the political landscape of America are shifting. And the shift is there are two things going on, right? There's people just fleeing states because they can't afford it anymore. So they're exiting California because they can't afford the taxes or the crime or the regulatory burden. Same thing with New York and New Jersey and Connecticut. But then there's a second part, which is it looks like core constituencies of the Democratic coalition, ones that have been around for 40 and 50 years, Jewish Americans, Hispanic Americans, African Americans, young people, Asian Americans. The polling data shows a really sudden dart out of the Democratic Party in many cases over to Donald Trump and the Republican Party. First, do you see that shift when you do your studying, and what do you think is driving it?
Well, you know, I do, John, and actually I'll go a step further. I think that there is, I like this idea of tectonic plates. You know, that's when tectonic plates move, the entire world changes, and in the real world and in the political world. And this election cycle, the stakes, for starters, are incredibly high. We know they're high around all the issues that relate to the culture and the economy and national security and the border. But they're high in places that people don't even realize. There are twice as many Democrats up as Republicans in the U.S. Senate. We have only a one-vote margin in the House right now, and that has got to be increased if America is going to hold its own. And, of course, we got the presidential election. But there are also seven or eight legislatures, if not more than that, at the state level that could flip this year. They're within, you know, 8 or 10 votes. And, you know, they range from Maine to Mississippi. And those are very important because they change the whole dynamic. I mean, by way of example, in Maine, the legislature appoints the attorney general and the secretary of state. So very, very important races at the state level, too. And of course, AMAC is constantly working on that. But on the point about the tectonic plate shifts in the constituencies, absolutely right. And I'll just give you a little bit of an insight. It isn't just that the constituencies themselves are shifting more conservative because they see that economic prosperity, taxes, regulation, the security on the streets for their kids, that security in the schools for their kids. They see all those issues for sure. And those we could dig on those, and that's where the polling. But there's another issue behind that issue, John, and it's not one people talk about. The Hispanic American voting population has jumped by 4 million between 2020 and now. It went from 32.3 to 36.2 million from 2020 to 2024. So these Hispanic, the legally voting, not the illegals, the legally voting Hispanic population will account for almost 15% of all voters in 2024. And they're up by 12%. So that's huge. And so what it means is, and in particular, and what are their big issues? The family is a huge issue. Catholicism, most Hispanic Americans are Catholic. They could be anything they want, but most are Catholic. And then finally, they are very hard workers. They have a big historic work ethic. Now that, you know, it varies by, you know, Cuban, Venezuelan, El Salvadorian, Dominican, you know, Colombian, Guatemalan, Mexican. But the reality is that there's there are these through themes that relate to the Hispanic vote. And the Hispanic vote will probably tip the balance almost assuredly in New Mexico, Texas, Arizona, Nevada, Florida, and California, if not also New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Illinois, and Colorado. So what does that mean? It means If Biden is losing core constituencies, and we could go one by one, but just stay with the Hispanic constituency at the moment. If he is losing all of them, John, and he's losing them on the merits and they're growing in their influence, I think we're in a different world order. I think tectonic plate shift is the right way to think of it.
It is remarkable. And I think it seems to me that Donald Trump's messaging is really tailored to that shift. Hey, we understand you want to decide what your children's future should be. And so school choice and portable school choice and things like that are top of mind. Then there is, I want to make your life more affordable because we're eating up too much of your costs with gas and rent and all the things that have been inflated. Sometimes the congressional rhetoric is missing that opportunity. There's such an opportunity for House Republicans and Senate Republicans to reach out and say, listen, we welcome you. And maybe we haven't seen eye to eye in the past, or maybe we just weren't talking to each other, but we see eye to eye now. How important is it for Congress to spend some time? This is like one of the most important things this summer, right?
John, absolutely, John. It is absolutely vital. And I would encourage every single Republican, if not every single member of Congress, to shake it off and go back to their district and just listen, not for the sake of listening, not lip service to the cause of listening, but really listen. And I'll tell you what they're going to learn. And this is true. What I'm about to tell you is true of the Hispanic population, but it is also true of all Americans. Right now, inflation, which is more than twice, almost three times what it was in January of 21, is killing people. I go into homes, talk to people, myself up here in Maine, and I look around and people are barely making it, John, number one. Number two, it is affecting affordable housing. Housing is a huge issue for young people, for older Americans, members of AMAC, for every American. It is affecting credit card rates and debt. It is affecting your ability to buy a car, even a used car. Used cars have one of the highest inflation rates in the country. So you get this massive inflation rate, which is also paired with a high interest rate because the Fed, I think wrongly, is trying to tackle a low growth inflation problem driven by cutting energy and by overspending by increasing interest rates in order to make money more expensive and slow down a high growth economy, which we're not in. But the bottom line is you've got high inflation, you've got high interest rates, you're seeing a growth in unemployment, you're seeing public insecurity. People want a sense that normal can be refound, and that means affordable housing. It means a decent job that isn't going to vanish tomorrow. It means, yes, of course, with wages, but wages that are not pressed up artificially, but are actually driven by the market. It means people have security in their ability to operate on the streets, and they can take their kids to school and believe that they're not going to be turned into Marxists. Okay, people just want normal. We're not looking for the moon. We're not going back to the moon right now. Maybe we are, but bottom line is we're looking for reality. And this is what Americans want. And if Congress doesn't listen and see it and talk about it and drive forward on it, if they become part of the spendaholic population again, then honestly, people get discouraged.
Yeah, no, that's it. They can tell when they were promised something and they didn't get it. And that, I think, is one of the dangers that House Republicans particularly have with all of the capitulations they've made in spending this year. I want to pivot to something else. You live in Maine, one of the more recent states to say, you know, we're done with this EV file. If you want to buy an EV, that's fine. But we're not going to force people to buy an EV because, one, they can't charge it in their home, most likely. Two, it may not do well in cold weather and icy weather, which Maine gets a lot of. And three, there isn't a lot of mileage for people who have to drive long distances. You got to charge a lot. Again, if people want an EV, and some of the EVs are very cool technology, they can get it. But forcing people to get it, it seems like from Maine to everywhere else in the country, this is wearing thin on people quickly, right?
It is. And I'll be quick about it to say that I think Maine, you know, it used to be a phrase on the electoral side that as Maine goes, so goes the nation. And I actually think, hey, you might be seeing a few of those things right now. Maine struggles with an imbalance. I mean, they struggle with arch liberals and people who sort of grew up in the state who kind of want the state to stay the way it's always been, which is kind of quiet, hardworking, and not interested in having the government tell them what to do. This electric vehicle thing has been sort of a spike in that entire conversation. And what happened is that an independent or a board that was put in charge of assessing do they or don't they push regulations in particular that followed the California example, mandating that between 2027 and 2032, 80% or 82% of Mainers would have to buy electric vehicles. They said no. Despite the governor and the Democrat-controlled legislature, this board said no. And why did they say no? Because when the weather, John, up here is rugged, we got a lot of lot of forest between houses. And the further north, you know, the further north you go, the more moose you have proportionate to people. And it's a very open area. You need reliable vehicles. You need gas-powered vehicles. You need the democratic principle that I will fill up my car with gas when I want. I'm not going to be told by someone else where, when, and how I need to drive. They need vehicles like 8-cylinder, you know, pickup trucks. They need snow plows. We had an outage. We just had another outage across the state. And imagine if all those state vehicles that were powered were all powered by electricity that were supposed to go out and fix the electricity that didn't exist. It wouldn't work real well. Americans in general and Mainers in particular are sort of common sense oriented people. And I think what they have come back to is, you know, this is the modern Betamax. This is the modern Edsel. We're not interested in it. OK, it's a, you know, if we want to go have remote control electric toys, we can do that. And if you want a remote control electric car, go buy it. It should be available. But don't make me buy what you want for yourself, and don't make me buy something that I don't want, can't afford, and won't work for me when I need it.
Yeah. It's funny. The main slogan that's on the flag has always been Dirigo, which means we lead. We lead. And I think Maine is leading. I think the messages that Maine has sent in the last 6 months over several of the issues that are, you know, at the forefront of the Washington, Maine is telling people, hey, we still lead and you better listen to us. I think the rest of the country is following. It's very, very interesting to watch Maine right now.
You know, honestly, John, when you get a nutty Mainer like this Secretary of State who decided she's going to single-handedly knock, you know, tell the Mainers that they can't have the right to vote for who they want to vote for, they get slam dunked. I mean, that was a 9-0 slam dunk. And so, I mean, there are people that are a little off their nut all over the country. And certainly, you know, but that doesn't mean that the bulk of the people don't have common sense. And I think Mainers and Americans do.
Yeah, I think so. And I think also there's been a little bit of tolerance. Hey, we'll try some of these new ideas. Oh, they don't work. All right, that's enough. We're done. And it's funny how self-adjusting the American public is. And I think the one thing that elitists suffer from, they really think the American people are stupid. They can fool them and they can lure them into things they're not. And this election may be the one where that is most going to be clear. Elitists are going to have a bad election. I think that's really where it's going to end up. I'd like to turn to one other story that I think has become increasingly important. And of course, you are a champion of liberty and all the jobs that you've held. You've always defended the core liberties that this country has recognized for its population as self-endowed as by from our creator. And a lot of people today, what a lot of people have accepted from the beginning of history, that these inalienable rights for some people like Justice Ketanji Brown, they suddenly become inconvenient rights. And you saw that in the free speech debate. But financial privacy feels like it is the area where people are most unaware of what's going on, the sort of surveillance going on in the system. And of course, the Chinese want that. They created a whole social scoring system so that everything you did and bought and used your money for could be tracked by the government. But there were two big developments. One is Jim Jordan's revelation late last year that the banks, and actually this started with some whistleblowers we first reported on that Jim Jordan followed, the banks were turning over Americans' bank records to in the January 6th FBI investigation without requiring a subpoena or search warrant, basically eviscerating the Fourth Amendment. And then last week, Jim Jordan paired with a congresswoman from Wyoming, and together they've discovered they have a whistleblower, a senior IRS official on videotape. The videotape where he's bragging about they have this new artificial intelligence system that goes through all of the bank records and then looks and says, hey, does Joe Smith's bank records match what he reported on his taxes? And none of that is being done with a warrant or any court oversight. In fact, I think on the tape, the IRS official is quoted as saying, oh, I don't think this is constitutional, but we're doing it anyways. Financial privacy, I think we just assume we always have it because it's been at the core, seems to be under threat right now.
Well, you're absolutely right, John. And I guess I'm going to say three things, sort of constitutional election Orwell, and maybe I'll say them backwards. You know, Orwell predicted all of this in 1984, his book, really phenomenal. And there were others, Aldous Huxley and others. But the gist is that when you have power concentrated in one place, the power, even if it were benevolently exercised, eventually eventually corrupts the entire process and becomes a tool of persecution. So we know how the IRS operates. I dare only say Lois Lerner. And we know that what happens is, in fact, AMAC initially as a group that's generally conservative, sort of the opposite number for a liberal group, was delayed for a long time in getting their nonprofit status for the piece of it that was nonprofit during that era. And why? Why did that happen? It happened because when you give power to people, and now you give the artificial intelligence power to cross-check to tax returns, even if you think in some distant universe that's a good thing for a benevolent dictator to have and guarantee some degree of honesty, it never gets used that way. It will be used as an act of persecution. Look, even our courts at the federal and state level are being used right now as a tool of persecution in a political campaign. That will happen to the nines. And do you think that the average taxpayer has the ability to defend against this enormous federal government that comes after them, right, wrong, or indifferent, and says that they're off in what they owe the government? No, it becomes a tool of incredible persecution and coercion. And so, no, it's a bad idea from the starting point of Orwell. Then go to the context of the Constitution. We have seen a continuous, intentional erosion. I think the COVID period elevated it, but we've seen a continuous erosion of the First Amendment, in particular the rights to free speech and the rights to worship, and frankly, even that is to say, free exercise of religion, and even in fact, and in everywhere, by the way, in your personal habits. You know, people don't even know. A child can stop in a class and pray if they want. There's nothing in the Constitution that prevents that, and there's no case law that prevents that. And yet, everybody is afraid now, you know, because of the boogeyman of the division of state and religion, that people believe that they don't have the private right that they have always possessed under the Constitution to worship as they please, no matter what their religion is, as long as it's peaceful and it's not hurting someone else. But you've got free speech under attack, you've got freedom of worship under attack, you've got a complete disintegration of the understanding of what the press is. The press has become an organ of the government. And our founders, John, you are the living embodiment of the opposite of that. But this is not what our founders would have loved you, and they would have hated the lefties, because the lefties are now just partisans for the government. And then you got the Second Amendment, and then you got the Fourth Amendment. Now, this goes to Fourth Amendment. Fourth Amendment is extremely important. People ought to go back and just read the First, the Second, the Fourth, the Fifth, the Sixth, and the Tenth. Those amendments define whether we are the United States of America or we are the Soviet Union. And if we lose the Fourth Amendment, and we've had other places, you know, I've never heard of a former government official, never mind a former president, who agrees to having the government come in and look at whatever he has, which other presidents have had in their possession, suddenly having 30 long arms disposed against him, a general warrant, which is illegal under the Fourth Amendment, and having his house turned upside down, which is also illegal under the Fourth Amendment, and no consequences. Why? Because the Attorney General of the United States has decided no consequences. So the Fourth Amendment is definitely under fire. And the last thing I'm going to say, John, is election. Okay, this election, I don't care whether you think taxes should be higher or lower. I don't really care whether you think this regulation or that one makes you happy or makes you angry. At the end of the day, this is an election about the freedom of the country. This is an election about the Bill of Rights. This is an election about whether you will preserve your privacy or forevermore the government will take hold of it. And it is a lot harder to regain a freedom. I mean, I've spent time in the Soviet Union and Soviet-dominated Poland and Hungary and Czechoslovakia. It is a lot harder to reverse the loss of freedom than it is to prevent the loss of freedom in the first place. Or as an old friend of mine used to say, it's a lot easier to kick down a barn than it is to build one. And I think then to rebuild it is hard. So we need to preserve what we've got. We need to think hard about this election, and we need to get every American who cares about America out there participating and voting.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt the stakes are high. Sitting on the sidelines isn't an option. And if you do sit on the sidelines, you don't get to complain afterwards, because you got to get in the game. This is a moment. All right, folks, don't go anywhere. More of our exclusive interview with Bobby Charles right after these messages.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, folks, welcome back. More of our exclusive interview with Bobby Charles. You used George Orwell in 1984, and I think a lot of people, particularly young people, because they've been deprived the opportunity to read that book as mandatory literature in schools these days, they've cut it out of a lot of school curriculum. Orwell wrote that book in 1949, and it was remarkable. He saw two things at once going on. He saw the rise of Lenin. One of his friends, when I was in high school, was an elderly friend at this point, but someone that he had been friends with told us this, and it was really remarkable. He saw the rise of Leninist Marxist communism, socialism beginning to spread outside of its nascent roots in Russia. And then he saw the rise of a larger government post-World War II, what Eisenhower would eventually call the military-industrial complex. And it scared the living dickens out of him that those two things would one day merge. And I think when you mention 84 and Orwell in the context of today, that's what's happening, right? Socialism has creeped into America in a big way in the left. And then the size of our government has sort of merged with it. And all of our liberties are just in such remarkable danger, like never before.
Well, they really are. You know, John, I by accident, I was looking back at the period of time in ancient Egypt, and I was taken by the fact recently that whether you're talking about the pharaohs, or you're talking about dictators and monarchs, or you're talking about fascists, or in particular, you're talking about the ruthless communists, the thing is always the same. Power corrupts, as I think Francis Bacon said, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And what you end up doing is the concentration of power, and this is what Orwell focused on, the concentration of power, particularly with the ruthlessness of a socialist/communist state that believes in a utopia that is going to be driven, an anti-religious utopia that is going to be driven by a few elites in control of you and me and everybody else. If that happens, you lose every single one of those rights that God gave us, those fundamental natural rights. And he mentioned, the reason I mentioned Orwell is because of privacy. If you remember, the main character in the book 1984 basically has no privacy at all. The surveillance is all over his life. It's in his home. It's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. The government sees, knows, and controls everything about his life. And so I would say to you that average Americans, indeed, forget average Americans, average human beings born all over the world and born 1,000 years from now will have a desire. A child 1,000 years from now will have a desire for free speech. If they wish to worship, they want to do that without persecution. They will want to protect their families and themselves. They will not want to be held captive unfairly. They will want to confront the people that accuse them of things. All of these things that the founders recognized were pivotal for the preservation of human freedom. And by the way, you get equality at an ever higher level if you pair that with the notion of the American dream, that we are all in this to enhance the freedoms of each other within the context of preserving our own. And the problem we've got, John, is that all this isn't being taught in the schools anymore.
That's where I was about to head. Education,
yeah, you're right?
Right. The education system is where this got disconnected somehow. Someone pulled the plug out of the wall.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And I guess the concern I have is it's not just, you know, it's kind of like when you're, I'm going to use a Maine analogy. When you're driving up a steep hill on ice, you get going and you keep the wheels moving and you keep the process going. But if you start to slide backwards, it's not a neutral process. You don't just stay in one place and unfortunately not keep going forward. You slide backwards. And what's happening with our educational system and in the country is, and that's why this election is so pivotal. If we do not protect what we have, we will not have it anymore to protect or to enjoy or to pass on to our kids. Right? Reagan was 100% on. You know, freedom does not get passed on through the gene pool. It gets passed on by education and belief in it and sacrifice for it and an appreciation for those who sacrifice to give us what we've got.
It's so important that we fix the disconnect. Someone took the Wall of Liberty and unplugged it from our students. And it's so remarkable to see how programmed they are to dislike America, or to see America simply as a country founded by racists, which is one of the narratives that we have today with CRT, DEI. And
you know, John, this is another one. You and I could do this all day, but I'm going to tell you something. This is another one that bothers the dickens out of me, okay? I've spent time in 50 countries plus as an assistant secretary of state for Powell, as an intelligence officer, doing a bunch of other things. I'm going to tell you, there is no country in the world, and I love our NATO allies, and I love Taiwan, and there is no country in the world that has the freedoms and the opportunities that this country provides to young people, to older people. And why is that? Well, walk through Arlington National Cemetery and you'll understand why you have all those liberties. And the bottom line is, if we don't work right now to focus people on the idea that this is the beacon of the world, why do you think that more than half of those coming across the southern border are coming from the Middle East, Africa, and the Far East? I mean, yeah, we got bad guys coming in there too, but they're coming in not, they don't think America's a racist country. They think America's the place where they can make their future. And they're right. It's not a racist country, and it is a place where they can make their future if they'll come legally. But the reality is, we are the beacon of the world, John. People don't realize this. They think that's rhetoric. I'm going to tell you, we are above the fold. The United States of America, the things happening in the United States of America, the collapse of that bridge in Baltimore, the way that the Democrats are going after Trump with the legal process and lawfare, this is above the fold in three quarters, if not nine tenths, of all the newspapers in the world. We make their news because we are the beacon of liberty. And if we fail, if we go out, light all over the world goes out.
It's amazing. It is that the stakes are that high. It isn't just our country. The rest of the world is looking for us. There is a great article on AMAC. And folks, part of the reason we do this every week is to remind you of all the incredible benefits that you'd get when you join the Association of Mature American Citizens. And by the way, you don't need to be a senior citizen to join. You can join at any age. You can give it as a gift to anyone. And you got Father's Day coming up and Mother's Day coming up and Easter. Great gift to give someone. But there's all this brilliant analysis you get in the AMAC family. And there was this story this morning, and it reminded me of something we had on the TV show last night. Last night, the superintendent of Oklahoma, Bobby, said, a superintendent of schools, Ryan Walter, said he found China sending money to the Tulsa School District, trying to get it to change the education curriculum there to make China look more favorable. And you have this extraordinary story today that there are things going on in the education system in China and communist China that are identical. China is trying to encourage America to be viewed negatively, and American leftist educators are trying to get America to be viewed as negatively in the school system. Two forces working in the same alignment, and it may explain why some of our kids are so confused about the founding and the values of this country. Are these educators playing into China's hand when they teach some of this negative stuff?
You know, I think they are, John. And I think what happens is you've got some Marxists that are a minority in this country trying to influence educators, trying to essentially shame them into taking on the leftist causes, whether it's transgenderism over girls, whether it's electric power over fossil fuels, whether it's the notion that we should be able to shut down speech we don't like because we don't like it. These are all Marxist notions. This DEI is a Marxist idea. This CRT is a Marxist idea. And I'm not, these are not opinions. Just go back and look at the orthodoxy of these ideas. Where do they come from? They are they're like a piece of clay getting reshaped in order to present the same piece of clay, but in a different way. And this is what they're doing. So are they playing into their hands? Yes. But I'll add one other thing. Very often people don't even know, you know, I think whoever invented the phrase useful idiots was a smart person. People don't even know that they're being used in a way that diminishes their own self-interest and reduces the options for and the opportunities and the freedoms of their children and those they're teaching. They don't even know that that's what's happening. And I'm going to tell you, China, I don't want to get too deep into it, but China is has a long-term strategy for fully corrupting and ultimately dominating the Western world. And they have been very effective at it. They're trying it through their Belt and Road. They're trying it through their mass surveillance. They're trying it, you know, they're chipping away until you've chipped away and there's nothing left to chip away anymore. And we are foolish if we, and we will regret it deeply, if we accept Chinese money in our universities, in our graduate programs, in our high schools, in our elementary schools, in our TikTok mania, if we accept the notion that China's way, the communist way, is going to somehow be is equally legitimate or can be tolerated, and we'll just take the money today and it'll be all right tomorrow. Wrong. Okay, if you sell your soul today, there is no soul to sell tomorrow. And that's where we're at right now. China is on a mission. And you know, God bless Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan pointedly said that communism was an evil, that there was no convergence, that you have types of government that preserve, protect, and imperfectly make possible your freedom and equality. And then you have those that are concentrated power that mandate and ultimately suppress those liberties. And really, these are 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock. They're opposite numbers. And by the way, you know, the 12 o'clock could be fascism or it could be communism. They're both a suppression of individual liberties. And the 6 o'clock, the preservation of individual liberty, could be any form of self-governance where the people make the decisions for themselves. But, John, we are in that crucible right now. Right now, it's China. It was the Soviet Union. Now it's China. And people just need to understand the stakes are high. And if you lose your freedom today, you will work the rest of your life and perhaps not even successfully to regain it tomorrow.
It is so high stakes. The debates we're having, the decisions we're making is going to shape America for a half century or century more, this generation, this moment in history. Bobby, it's always a great honor to have you on. And folks, if you love Bobby's wisdom like I do, and I know you do because you're listening today, you can get this every day at the Extraordinary AMAC website, amac.us/justnews. If you go there today, you can become a member. And you're not just joining a service. We go to AARP, go to other places. It's a service. You're joining a community of patriots. It is a community first. It has all the benefits of the services too. You get discounts. When I go on travel, I save money everywhere I go, on hotels and travel and other things. There are savings on insurance programs. There are help with Social Security and Medicare. There is a weekly podcast with Rebecca Weber, brilliant. A monthly magazine, glossy, gorgeous read. You can sit down on a Sunday morning and have an old-fashioned read. And of course, you get daily news. There's two things we're doing this month. It's a very special partnership we have. If you sign up between now and Easter Sunday, this Sunday, you'll get two subscriptions for the price of one, meaning that you can give one as a gift. Maybe give it on Easter morning. Give it on Father's Day. Mother's Day, it's a great gift. After March 31st, on April 1st, you'll be able to get a four-year membership for $30. That's the best price they've ever had. 4 years for $30. That is a steal. Less than $10 a year. This moment you invest, you're going to suddenly be making that money back three or four times on just discounts. So go right now and say thank you to AMAC for everything it and Bobby does. AMAC.us/justnews. AMAC.us/justnews. Either give it as a gift before March 31st or give yourself a gift and save some money and get yourself a four-year membership for just $30. Bobby, we love you. This is such a great conversation, and the wisdom that you shared today should resonate in all of our minds as we head into this very important 2024 election.
You know, I just want to thank you again, John, because not only are you a great investigator and you're out there spreading the gospel of truth to people, but on the AMAC issue in particular, you know, there are a lot of people out there that admire the problem. We can all admire the problem. We know it. We see it in our own day-to-day lives. We see it on the national screens, et cetera. But the reality is, when you buy into AMAC, when you get a subscription, you know, an annual or a 5 year or whatever you want for AMAC, what you're really doing is you're giving heart and you're giving hope to people. We don't just admire the problem, and there's no jingoism to it. It's all about finding solutions that will save the country, which is exactly what you do every day, John. You're out there flipping rocks and bringing truth to people's minds and eyes, and that's what AMAC does, and that's what we believe is the future of the country.
You got an exciting event coming up in Bucks County, Pennsylvania in April, the second boot camp for boomers. another chance for anyone living in the Pennsylvania area to come and learn how to engage in patriotism, get engaged in this country. The last one in Florida was a smashing success. This is going to be a fun one in Pennsylvania, isn't it?
It is. And I, you know, we had Riley Gaines down there in Florida. I'd love to see these things happen all over the country. I'd love to see one up here in New England. I think people are frustrated. And what they are asking is, what can I do to save my country? What can I do to protect my grandkids? What can I do to preserve my savings? What can I do? And the answer is, there's a lot you can do. And AMAC is at this every single day. By the way, they have a foundation that's focused on veterans. They have another foundation dedicated to the proposition of Social Security security, so that people really understand how they can preserve what their savings are. At the end of the day, and there was great prescience in the founding of this organization 15 years ago, people would never at that time have imagined that the country could slide so fast in the wrong direction. But I think what AMAC is doing is halting that slide, and there are millions of members nationwide. They're halting that slide. And if you want to be part of the solution, just join AMAC.
And I'll tell you what, I'm going to be at the Bucks County event. I'm going to broadcast live from there, the TV show that night, so we can watch what's going on, watch the history unfolding there. So folks, you want to come meet me, you want to have a great conversation in Bucks County in late April, please go check it out at AMAC. Go join. I think you'll have a great moment and we'll get to see each other, which is always a fun thing. Bobby, love it. We can't wait for next week. I'm already getting excited about next week, but thank you for today's great conversation.
Thank you so much, John.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports. Hey, quick reminder, if you want to take advantage of that special AMAC offer, it is AMAC, AMAC.us/JustNews. If you want to subscribe to the Just the News ad-free experience and also support our VIP club, which helps us hire more reporters and editors and more investigators, go to justthenews.com/subscribe. Those are the two important opportunities for today. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of John Solomon Reports. Until then, God bless you and have a great, great evening.